This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, what's going on?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. I am so happy to be here and looking forward to this episode of the Sweep Spot.
This is episode 377.
377, Lynn, that's unbelievable. That's hard. That is so hard to believe. And that's a lot. So good going, Lynn.
Oh, good going to you. Ken and I are both former Disneyland Custodial cast members, and we host the number one Disneyland podcast hosted by two former Disneyland custodians.
Number one.
We're also the authors of the books Queening the Kingdom. We have two different volumes you can get, and you can get the second one autographed by both of us on our website, thesweetspot.com, or you can get both of them unsigned at Amazon. And you get digital copies wherever those are found, like Kindle. You can get the audio versions of the books narrated by Ken. You can get those on Kindle or Audible or wherever audiobooks are found. Also, you can join our Patreon. It really helps us out. We really appreciate it. And you can do that by going to Patreon and searching The Sweet Spot, are going to our website, thesweetspot.com, and clicking on the link. And what you get is, for $5 or more per month, you get one bonus episode delivered to you that Ken and I record specifically for the Patreons once a month. And then you also get to join in on the current events live. As we do that, we record it live with you in the chat room, and you get to leave comments as we discuss different topics and chat amongst yourselves in the chat room. It's a lot of fun, and we really appreciate everyone that supports us. If that doesn't interest you, but you just want to give a little just to help, and we even have people that, you know, give a dollar, and that's totally fine. We appreciate everything that you're willing to give for the entertainment we provide and information. So, Ken.
Yes.
Who's our guest tonight?
Well, we are welcoming back author Seth Kuberski. And Seth is an author of The Unofficial Guide to Disneyland. But they also have the unofficial guides also include, Walt Disney World, Universal mm-hmm. properties, Las Vegas, and even Washington, D.C. So,
wow.
Talk about scary places, Washington, D.C. But thrill rides, you know, you can get all kinds of thrill rides in Washington, D.C. It's a political joke, folks. Never mind. We're welcoming him back. We're going to have a nice discussion.
I'm looking forward to it. Let's get right into it. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. By booking with me this year, you will receive 3 months free of our Patreon perk, like our bonus episodes, and join in on our current events live. So contact me at lbarron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com, that's concierge.com, or thesweepspot@gmail.com. For our main topic, we're going to welcome back someone that we had on been a while. It's probably been 4 or 5 years, and that is Seth Kuberski, and he is an author for the unofficial guide that I'm holding here. I have the Universal Orlando 2024 and the Disneyland Unofficial Guide 2024. Welcome to our show, Seth.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Thanks, Ken. Yeah. It is great to be back on. Yeah, I feel like it was probably like just before the pandemic hit the last time we talked, a whole different world in theme parks and everything else. So it's great to talk to you again.
Well, you're kind of all over the place. I mean, you do a lot of reporting in Orlando area, and you've written these books.
This last year, I've been all over the place. I did my first trip to Hong Kong Disneyland and my first trip to the UAE to go to the theme parks in Abu Dhabi. I've been all over. Plus, yes, of course, the unofficial guide to Disneyland 2024, unofficial guide to Universal Orlando, and we've also got the unofficial guide to Las Vegas, if you feel talking about the attractions in Las Vegas. I'm your man.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that. So we'll kind of go back a little bit. So writing for the unofficial guides, what kind of research goes into something like that?
I will say the first part of my research is I spend an hour to 2 hours every day just reading emails, reading social media, reading blogs, watching YouTube. It's at least 2 hours, you know, an hour to 2 hours every day, just keeping up with all of the news in the theme park world. And then it is usually a minimum of 2 full days a week in a theme park. I usually try to do a day a week at Disney, a day a week at Universal. Sometimes it's more than one theme park in a day. Today I got to visit SeaWorld for the kickoff of their Seven Seas Food Festival, which is kind of, you know, we always talk about the big food festivals at Epcot and the food they've got at Mardi Gras for Universal, and SeaWorld's food festivals kind of run under the radar, but it's literally the largest food festival in Central Florida right now. I got to check that out. I did Universal twice this week. I did a day at Epcot, and I did a visit to MegaCon, which is like a theme park, because you've got all the Marvel characters, you've got all the Disney characters, you've got Harry Potter and Star Wars, but it's basically the biggest fan convention in the East Coast, up there with the Dragon Con. Really, it's like almost as big as San Diego Comic-Con at this point.
Nice.
And that's going on right now at the Orange County Convention Center. Massive. I got actually to go over to Disney Springs, Planet Hollywood, and meet John Rhys-Davies, who played Sala in Indiana Jones movies and Gimli the Dwarf. If you remember Sliders, that awesome TV show, he was the professor on that. And we got to meet him, at Planet Hollywood and have a great conversation with him. So it's one of the great things about living in Orlando is even though in a lot of ways we're kind of a small town, all of these amazing people from around the world kind of come here if we didn't have the theme parks, they certainly probably wouldn't be here otherwise.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I thought, wow, it's just started with Disney. But speaking of that, the big news this week, something I wanted to talk to you about, the Epic Universe is, they had their promo video come out and a lot more information was revealed. And all the attention and excitement was drawn, on Universal. And I do travel planning too on the side, and I've already had a couple people, hey, put me on a list when you start booking that. So that's interesting because Disney, was always known as the, you spend a whole week there. And when you watch that video, they mentioned that you could spend a week with us.
You have put your finger on the key moment in that whole video. Right. That video that Universal released, which those of us who are into theme parks, who are, obsessive about following all the developments and all of the rumors, I have to give a tip of the hat to my colleague Alicia Stella from Orlando Park Stop, who is our collaborator with us. She had input on the unofficial guide to 2024. She's going to be giving us a lot more, contributing to the 2025 book, helping us put together a guide to Epic Universe that is complete and detailed almost a full year before the park opens. She's the only person I know on Earth who doesn't work for Universal who could do that. So she is collaborating with us. She's a member of the team now. The general public is just now becoming aware of what Epic Universe is. And I think that, we saw the Universal brand take a huge step up when the first Harry Potter opened in 2010. A lot of people who never considered taking time out of their Disney vacation to go to Universal, when Harry Potter opened, now it's, I'm going to take a day or maybe even 2 days out of my trip to Disney and I'm going to go to Universal. And I think that Epic Universe is then putting the marker and saying, no, you're going to take a Universal vacation and maybe you'll take a day out to go to Disney. Maybe.
Right, yes.
That is a huge flip of the switch. Like that, the idea that all these other things like SeaWorld and Disney and, Gatorland, Fun Spot, whatever you want, we're all the hangers-on, we're just feeding off of the audience that Disney brought. And now Universal is saying, no, we are the draw. We are the headliner and Disney can have our crumbs. And that's bold, for a company that, had dark, dark times where they sold off the land that Epic Universe is going to sit on. They owned that years and years ago. They sold it off cheap because they were desperate for cash in their dark days before Harry Potter. And now for them to, buy it back and build a park on it that is going to basically say, who needs Disney? You can spend a week here. That's a bold, bold move.
Do you know how many acres that was? I didn't catch if they mentioned that, how big it is.
That is an excellent question. And I have it in my book, which is sitting here, but it's 400 pages long.
That's fine, yeah.
I know that it is smaller in acreage than the original Universal campus, but it is large enough to hold a theme park that is, easily the size of a Magic Kingdom, not the size of an Animal Kingdom quite, because Animal Kingdom's real big.
Right.
I don't know right off the top of my head the exact acreage, but you are talking about a park that's going to open with a hub that is more akin to the hub of a Shanghai Disneyland than any of the parks that we know, a hub that is huge and expansive. Imagine a Main Street plus a central hub large enough to hold rides and a full-scale fountain show. You know, much closer to something that you'd see in Shanghai than here. And then four fully developed lands, fully built out lands, each with their own e-tickets and d-tickets from opening day. And then, you know, a 500-room hotel and two 750-room hotels, and room for expansion all around. If not another full park, there's already land set aside on the Nintendo side and on the Harry Potter side where you're going to see expansions if this hits the way they expect. You know, are things already being poured, foundations for expansions to open a year or 2 years after the park opens. So this is... you know, when you put together the number of attractions that you will have at Universal Studios Florida, Islands of Adventure, and Epic Universe, the content, the quantity of content is going to match up pretty well with the four parks that you've got at Disney, I think.
How far is it? I don't even really know where it's at, the universe.
So it is straight south, just a couple miles south of the current Universal campus. It is just across from Universal Boulevard from the Orange County Convention Center, where that MegaCon fan convention that I just mentioned is happening. And it is, geographically speaking, perfectly aligned. It's just north of the Beach Line, which is the major toll road that takes you from the airport towards Disney. And it is also like almost within walking distance of where they're planning on putting the next train station for the high-speed rail that connects Miami to the Orlando airport. It's going to stop at Universal, and Disney had a chance to have it stop at Disney Springs, but they kind of messed around, and it looks like it's going to stop at Universal instead and then head to Tampa, wow. Which is, you know, if Disney doesn't reverse that course, that could be a big loss for them, because I've taken that train to Miami many times, and it is fantastic. It's way better than sitting on the road.
I'm sitting here staring at you in California because we supposedly are going to eventually have a high speed.
Yes,
train here,
you but... are. So Brightline, the same company, I was just at a meeting with the head of the Orlando airport and the head of Brightline, talking to them. And he said their next project is a direct high speed rail, same company, from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. And if they can turn that 4 hour, you know, 5-7 hour drive on a weekend with the way the traffic backs up at the state line where it goes down to like what, two lanes? It's insane. If you can replace that with a high speed rail, that'll get you there in 2 hours and you can drink the whole way on the train. You know what? Yeah, that's going to be a big hit. And so, yes, if we get the infrastructure that we are looking at, they have already they are building a direct bus lane that will go dedicated bus lane straight down the middle of Kirkman Road that will go straight from the old Universal Campus parking garage straight to the gate of the new park. And those are going to run Universal electric buses that are it's going to be faster to get from the old Universal to the new Universal than it is to get from Magic Kingdom to Epcot.
Wow,
that's great. Yeah,
yeah.
I think what's exciting is we want to see how Disney's going to respond to this, you know.
Well, you know, they are responding with blue sky teases. They're you know, they're responding by saying, just hold on, we're going to turn Dinosaur into Indiana Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to put we're going to put Encanto here. We're going to put Coco over there. We're finally going to build that Villains Mountain that Jim Hill was talking about 20 years ago out behind Frontierland. I mean, I'll believe it when I see the bulldozers moving.
Nothing's concrete except for the thing used to be Splash Mountain, but that's not concrete anymore. That's being changed.
You know, the difference for me between Universal and Disney has always been Disney will show you a concept art and another piece of concept art, and a third piece of concept art, and 5 years later, you'll finally ride it. Meanwhile, Universal's got the bulldozers going. They're putting up steel. They're building tracks. And then they say, what? No, it's a churro stand. Really, we're not building anything at all. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I can remember being at the grand opening for Despicable Me, Minion Mayhem at Universal Orlando that replaced the old Jimmy Neutron ride. And at the same time that they opened Despicable Me, with like practically the same day, they tore down the old Hercules and Xena, originally Murder, She Wrote, to build Transformers the Ride, because for tax purposes, they had to build that thing in like 364 days. And I can remember being at the grand opening of Despicable Me and filming Mike West, one of their Universal creators, lead designers at the time, interviewing him about Despicable Me, with the Transformers building literally be, or the old, what was before the Transformers building, literally being demolished behind him, like, you know, heavy construction going on behind him, and asking, so what's that going on right behind you? And being like, I don't know what you're talking about. We're not doing anything. So, you know, Disney will tease you. They will show you gorgeous pictures of what, you know, this big elevated platform that they're going to build behind Spaceship Earth and the Mary Poppins ride and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, and if you're lucky, you know, those of us who remember Dick Tracy's Crime Stoppers and Time Racers and all the other things that never happened. Universal, by the time that they admit they're doing something, it's already half done. So having seen, you know, how quickly Universal has moved ahead with this, Disney's got to respond with something a little more than a rethemed Splash Mountain and new songs for the Country Bears.
Yeah, I mean,
well, what if they, okay, stay with me here.
I'm staying with it.
They turned all the Jungle Cruise animals into various Disney characters. So there.
Ooh. More IP. That will solve, more IP will always solve everything. And, you know, it is, I mean, on the topic of IP, it is kind of interesting the way the new park at Universal, almost very similar to what they do with Halloween Horror Nights. You know, Halloween Horror Nights, you get 10 haunted houses every year. Five of them are always IPs, a couple owned by Universal, and then usually a couple owned by some third party that they license out. And then you get the other half is like either their internal stuff or just like original stuff that they've created. And they've done something kind of similar with Epic Universe. You know, you've got this celestial park that's the hub, the kind of central theme, which is a totally original idea. You've got How to Train Your Dragon, which is, you know, DreamWorks, which is related to Steven Spielberg. It's sort of Universal adjacent. You've got Harry Potter, which is Warner Brothers, but it's now very identified with the Universal brand. You've got Super Nintendo, which is, you know, its own huge brand, and in its way bigger than Universal. You know, Mario is probably one of the two or three biggest character franchises in the globe, most like globally recognized. But then you've got them going all in with the Universal Classic Monsters, which is their own kind of homegrown thing. So, you know, I think the days where we would open a theme park that's like things like Jungle Cruise and Pirates and Haunted Mansion that don't have IPs or movies associated with them, like that's, I'm kind of nostalgic for that, but I don't think that you can expect that a company is going to invest millions of dollars into something and not have some sort of proven emotional connection to the characters, like you have with the themes that they've chosen for Epic.
Right.
Wow. It's going to be, it's very interesting.
It's going to be exciting 2025 for sure.
Well, it's kind of like, it's, you know, for the content creators, it's basically, you know, choose your venue, you know, if you don't operate your own themed entertainment venue, then you've got to pick, you know, where is my stuff going to end up? You know, Walt Disney World or Universal or SeaWorld or, you know, because like you pointed out, you know, Harry Potter for Warner Brothers and things like that. And, you know, there's other content creators out there, Sony, which, you know, they have movies, you know, Paramount was involved in theme parks for a while.
Paramount was in the theme park game and then got out of it. And, you know, there are certain brands that don't have a strong theme park presence anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I have a sneaking suspicion that some of them that you might see coming in the next half decade or so, I would keep an eye on Universal's development in Great Britain. They've bought a big plot of land at a not right in London, but at a great spot with great road access outside of London. And, you know, I think that some brands that people have talking for many, many years, like Lord of the Rings or James Bond, you know, there's only a few low hanging fruit. If you look at the list of the, like, you know, top 50 grossing franchises in film history, there's only a few of them that don't have really good theme park representation. I personally, my white whale, from Moby Dick terms of theme parks, I think the best theme park attraction ever built not inside a theme park was the Star Trek Experience at the Hilton in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways that experience was like Rise of the Resistance 20 years before Rise of the Resistance.
Yeah.
And if someone could come along and do an entire Star Trek theme park or land on that kind of level of quality, I they'd have my money, whether that was Disney or Universal. Paramount is actually right now, believe it or not, they've destroyed the iconic volcano in front of the Mirage Hotel on the Las Vegas Strip and turned it into the Paramount Mountain from their logo. And they're turning it into the Paramount Global Village, where they're going to have interactive experiences based on different Paramount franchises. We don't know exactly what's going on in there, but that should be interesting to see what that turns out as.
Oh, wow.
Well, on the West Coast, you know, because we're mainly Disneyland podcast, but we love talking all theme parks, but there's a new roller coaster they're building over there, right?
Oh, yes. You are finally going to get a ride that really is Fast and Furious. I think everyone can pretty much agree that the Fast and Furious 3D tunnel that they added to the end of the studio tour was all right. Like, you know, the King Kong thing that they added was better than nothing. Like we were all tragic when the original Kong burnt down, and we know they weren't going to spend the money to rebuild one of those. So, like, you know, the 3D Kong was the next best thing. And the Fast and the Furious was kind of one of those things that was like so bad it's almost good. But man, when they turned it into an attraction in Orlando, everyone was like, this is neither Fast nor Furious. Discuss. So the fact that you are getting an honest-to-God roller coaster with launches, it looks kind of like Velocicoaster, but it spins. I guess that's going to be the rotation of the cars is going to be kind of a drifting effect. I know Tokyo Drift is everyone's least favorite installment in the franchise, but I guess they're gonna drift those cars around, not just for the cool sensations and the looks, but also to face people's screams away from the very angry neighbors who don't particularly like having a theme park next door. I think I am very excited to see that completed. It is definitely going to be quite the sight when you are going on that endless escalator up and down the hill and watching people screaming on a roller coaster going past you. It'll make that 14 minute stairway or starway experience a lot more interesting.
I thought about that. I thought they didn't have a lot of outdoor coasters because of the, you know, the filming that, on, yeah.
That was, you know, that was always the thing that they wanted to keep quiet, both for the mm-hmm. sound, you know, the production purposes and right. also for the neighbors. They've got some very expensive property just outside of their borders. Uh-huh. So there's actually a really interesting document that they published in order to kind of convince the locals to not fight this. They did all sorts of sound survey studies. Disneyland's done something very similar for their Disneyland Forward proposals. Mm-hmm. And if you like reading really nerdy documents, you can see all the explanation of how they plan on putting up sound barriers and mufflers. I remember the last time I was out there during the fall, they had speakers up where they were blasting pre-recorded screaming and then using decibel meters to see how loud it was from other spots.
Oh.
Yeah. A lot of sound engineering going into designing that attraction.
Yeah, I always love. I'm a fan of Universal Hollywood, and been, you know, went there my whole life, enjoyed it, and yeah, I always like to see expansions there. I think if they had the land, they would definitely do more with it. But.
Well, I mean, you are going to see in the next, you know, the debate has always been whether they add more attractions or tried mm-hmm. to create a whole second park. I have a hard time seeing where they have room to fit a whole nother park. But what right. they are doing is adding new hotels. I think you're going to see two new hotels going up in the not too distant future. I think you're going to see one with a lot of similarities to the Aventura Hotel, which mm-hmm. is like an ultra modern hotel that we have here in Orlando. Not sure about the second hotel, but like where you have that close in parking lot right outside of the theme park security, there you're going to see a hotel go up there.
Nice.
In the Super Nintendo has brought so much attention and so much attendance to that park. They just talked at their recent quarterly financial report about, you know, Orlando's doing okay, but Hollywood's doing gangbusters right now. People are spending money in Super Nintendo World. They're buying those bracelets. They're going to Toadstool Cafe. You know, they're buying the merch. So yeah, I would think any chance they have to double down on that, they're going to. The only thing I would hope is that if they're going to bring in more hotels, that they make it more of a resort experience at Universal Orlando. When you stay on site, you get early entry, and depending on the hotel, you get free express passes, and they have you know, good transportation. You really feel like it's an integrated resort experience. And you know, I've stayed at the Sheraton. I'm going to be staying at the Hilton in just a couple weeks, and it just sort of seems like a hotel that happens to be near Universal, not necessarily a Universal hotel. Right. And I hope that changes if they want to really become a resort.
And then we have Disneyland, and we just recorded our current events, and we spoke a little bit about that Disneyland Forward, of course. So many possibilities. There's just trying to get things permitted, you know, the land permitted for different, what do they call it, zoning. Trying to get it zoned. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They've always wanted to have more flexibility, you know, not to be locked into this spot has to be parking, this spot has to be hotels. The ability to have the theme park, you know, flow right up to the hotel, like you can have in Tokyo, or like they have for, right now for the Grand Californian,
right?
But to expand that to the Disneyland Hotel and the new Pixar Pier Hotel, first of all, you can justify charging the rates that they do for those hotels, because right now you can stay at a motel on Harbor Boulevard for half the price and you're inside Disneyland Park in half the time than walking from Pixar or from the Disneyland Hotel. I mean, other than the half hour of early entry, there's really no benefit to staying on site. But if the theme park actually wraps around the hotel, then that then you can justify those prices. Yeah. And, you know, they've teased us with Avatar and Black Panther and some of the stuff that they've got in Tokyo. I got to say, when they first talked about bringing Frozen, having experienced Frozen at Epcot, I was like, eh, you can have it. Then I went to Hong Kong and experienced World of Frozen in Hong Kong. And if they can bring that quality level, that immersiveness, that the Frozen world is to Hong Kong Disneyland what Hogsmeade is to Islands of Adventure. It's like on a different level in terms of the theming, the immersion, the sense of place. And, you know, the Frozen ride at Epcot that was adapted from the old Norway ride, it's okay. But it feels like the rough draft. And the one in Hong Kong is the e-ticket version of it. It's not anything completely different. They haven't added any completely different scenes, but every element has just been plussed. So you're like, oh, this is what they should have done the first time. And if they can they can take that and drop that in Anaheim, it will be a big hit.
Yeah, I just feel like they need another park. I mean, it's just always crowded now. You remember late 90s, early 2000s, you could go in January.
Yeah, there were slow times. There was a time when there were slow times, you know, between manipulating the, formerly annual pass holders, now Magic Key holders, you know, manipulating them with blackout dates and reservations. And then for regular guests, the different tiers. Now we've got tier 0 through 6, I think, of pricing. And then you throw in the discounts that they throw at locals on top of it. They've kind of ensured that there are no slow days anymore. Yeah. And I agree. I definitely agree that they need more capacity. I don't necessarily know if they need a whole nother park. Like if you can expand the boundaries of the two additional parks and because when you add another park, there's a certain amount of infrastructure. You know, you have to have another place to rent the wheelchairs. You have another place to have the turnstiles. You have to do this and that, you know, and that, so there's a certain amount of labor and infrastructure that you have to account for that. If you're just expanding the boundaries of your existing parks, you can fit more people, sell more tickets to your existing parks, and squeeze more people in there without them being quite as miserable because they've got more stuff to do. Then, you know, I do agree that there's a certain amount of publicity benefit to saying we're opening a whole new park.
Oh yeah.
Big revenue too, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But, that's, you know, that's the question. Does that outweigh the advantages of just, expanding the boundaries of your current park? You know, if you look carefully at the Disneyland Forward plans, it doesn't necessarily look like a completely separate gate. It looks like, you know, tunnels, connections, to the current parks. So I guess that's just the stuff that is going on around the west side of the current Disneyland Resort campus. The what's going on the Toy Story lot, which that's a whole nother can of worms. I think that's going to be more like a Disney Springs type experience. It's going to be more shops and restaurants and merchandise and some entertainment, but not necessarily theme park attraction.
I guess we'll have to wait and see on that.
I think it's going to be, we're going to be talking about it for the next 10 years. You know, part of me is still surprised that they didn't just go along when they had the chance to buy the Anaheim Garden Walk.
Yeah.
Because that is perfectly located to connect.
That's like the biggest
Toy Story area, Toy Story lot to their main campus.
It's like, why? Why not? Was it just too pricey for them?
I can't imagine. It was a zombie mall. And the last time I saw it change hands, it seemed to be going for a song, you know, relative to what the real estate in that area should go for. You know, the only thing that I can think is that there are still a lot of third party, like, you know, you've got Bubba Gump there and McCormick and Schmick's and California Pizza Kitchen. Maybe Disney didn't want to deal with those third-party lessees. House of Blues moved over there. But it seemed, I mean, especially since they own that parking lot that's just north of it, which, you know, someday there's supposed to be some new pedestrian walking over Harbor Boulevard, a whole new security setup. Buying Garden Walk always seemed to make sense to me, but doesn't look like it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When you talk about, you know, I mean, East Coast and West Coast, with the expansion of Universal on the East Coast, you're getting to the point, you know, like if you're going to go for a week, most likely your base is going to be focusing on Walt Disney World, and you throw in, you know, SeaWorld and Universal. But you get to the point where Universal can, like you, we started out saying, you know, Universal can do that where, hey, you stay with us for the week and maybe you go to some of the other places, or and you know, come back next. I mean, if you have to, if you feel like you want to see it all, then come back next year or whatever. But on the West Coast, you know, you've got Disneyland Resort with, you know, California Adventure, Disneyland Park. There's Knott's. If I had my way, Knott's would get the Buena Park Mall that's directly east of its property, and it would expand, you know. But
yeah,
but then you have Universal, you know, which you were talking about. Universal was didn't start out with the intention of being a theme park. It's a working movie studio.
Sure.
So now you have it, you know, it's on a hill. You know, you do need that long escalator, right? But there's nowhere for it to really, they can't really add another park. And then of course there's Magic Mountain up in the boonies of the county, which if the merger goes through is going to be owned by the same company as Knott's.
yeah
that should be interesting when
none of those, I mean, Disney, you could kind of make the better part of a week out of Disney as it currently is. If they do expand, then yeah, you're going to be up to close to a week.
Well, I think the big difference is that all the places on the West Coast that you mentioned are in Los Angeles, which even if it didn't have any theme parks, would be a fantastic tourist city. You know, you have the studio. I've done a studio tour at Paramount. Warner Brothers has a great studio tour. You know, you've got amazing museums like LACMA and the Getty. I'm going to be going to see the Luna Luna exhibit, which is like a theme park created by artists like Basquiat and Keith Haring. You know, LA's got a lot of great culture, a lot of great tourist attractions. It doesn't necessarily need another theme park. If you took all of the theme parks out of Orlando, I'm sorry. We have great theater and all that, but none of it would really exist here if the theme parks weren't here first. Yeah. So, you know, for us, we are overly dependent on theme park as an industry, as, you know, as a tax base. It's not a great thing to build your economy on, because you end up with a lot of people working minimum wage jobs and trying to find an apartment where, you know, a one bedroom apartment runs $2,000 a month now. And whereas in Los Angeles, you have people who are working entry level jobs at the theme parks who are making $20+ an hour. They're making significantly more doing the same work in a Los Angeles area theme park than they would be doing in an Orlando area theme park. Granted, you have a state income tax that we don't. In some ways, your costs of living are higher. But honestly, like, Orlando used to be a cheap place to live. It's not anymore. A lot of the advantages that Florida used to have over California have eroded, especially with recent inflation. I know inflation is really terrible in California, but I think that also the, like, general standard living and basic pay for, you know, frontline jobs is also higher in California. So.
Yeah, it's definitely, competition is good. We come out ahead with that because we benefit from it. But right. Seth, anything else going on you want to promote? Or
no, I mean, we are just we are always working on the guides. You know, the book comes out at the end of each year, so that it's out fresh at the beginning of the year. But mm-hmm. then all through the year, you know, we're on our social media platforms and on the unofficialguides.com. I'm just going to be putting up in the next day or so February updates for both the Disneyland books and Universal Orlando books, because, you know, it's tough keeping track, keeping on top of all of this stuff. But it's a moving target, and I would love to come back in the future and talk more with you guys about it.
Well, and which books are these?
Well, the Unofficial Guide to Disneyland 2024, the Unofficial Guide to Universal Orlando 2024, and I also contribute to the Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World, Unofficial Guide to Las Vegas, and we have an Unofficial Guide to the Disney Cruise Line. Mm-hmm. And you can find all of them at your local bookstore, if you still happen to have a local bookstore.
Yeah.
or just head to theunofficialguides.com and we will ship it right out to you.
I have to say that unofficial guides are usually better, well, especially from you, I'm saying this, the unofficial guides are going to be better than the official stuff, because the unofficial guides are going to tell you things the official stuff won't tell you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we do declare right up front, we are independent. If something sucks, we will tell you it sucks. We don't need to make anyone happy. Because, you know, a lot of people who are content creators, or, you know, theme park social media folks, they're really dependent on staying in the park's good graces, because they need those invitations. They need those, you know, to go to those influencer parties or whatever, so they can get their content. And we, you know, we buy our tickets to go into the park, and we, you know, pay for the foods so we can tell you it sucks without being afraid of incurring the wrath of someone from publicity. So,
right. Well, we're big fans and we appreciate everything you do. And thank you so much for coming on.
Well, we are fans of you. We definitely recommend you in the books as one of our podcasts to keep an ear out for. It is great talking to you. Let's make sure it isn't like 4 years in a pandemic till the next time.
Yeah, well, let's nobody get sick now. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks a lot. Wow. Another episode, Ken.
Yeah, I enjoyed that, and
I did too.
I could talk with Seth for a lot longer, but, you know, we try not to keep people too long, because most of the people we talk with have pretty busy lives. You know, as I said, unofficial guides are a great resource. If you're serious about planning visits to places, you know, like they do have Vegas and in Washington DC, but of course, what you should do, you know, I'm not to belabor the point, but
yeah,
you should definitely work with concierge and go with Lynn, because he can keep you up to date on everything that's changing. You know, the unofficial guides are great. You should do both.
Yeah, I use them as a reference for a lot of research. Yeah.
You know, there you go. You should do both. You should check out the unofficial guides, and you should have a live person doing all the heavy legwork for you when you're going on a vacation. So thanks again to Seth for coming on, and that I'm looking forward. You know, I was starting to get excited about Universal Orlando.
I know. No, it's great to have that competition, and I'm glad that he came on, also because he mentioned that we are mentioned. There's only a couple, maybe three or four podcasts mentioned in the Disneyland Unofficial Guide, and we've been mentioned in that book several years now. So,
well, that is the biggest sign that it is a quality guide.
Or it's going downhill.
If I humbly say so, you know.
No. I hope we don't bring it down, but yeah. No.
No, that's I love opening up my copy and going, look there, you know, there we I are.
Yeah, I went to Barnes and Noble a few weeks ago, and yeah, we have one here still, and I went in there and I looked for it, and I was like, hey, Aaron, look, I know you showed me the one at home. I said, yeah, but we're in public.
It's in a store. It's in Barnes and Noble, you know. Yeah.
So funny. Well, yeah, thanks again, Seth. That was great. So I wanted to move right in. We always say we'll read a review if you leave one, and someone did, so I'm going to read it. This is from Apple Podcasts. On my iPhone here, and of course always cuts off the title best jingle ever, so we'll just I love that. ... January 26, 2024, 5 stars from Ortsack 66. Wow. Some of these usernames are unique. Okay, here we go. The Sweet Spot is one of the first Disneyland-centric podcasts I found when planning trips. So delightful. I appreciate Lynn's and Ken's decades of knowledge, experience, and expertise. Every episode is a must listen. Wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. That's going to help people find the podcast and... it's always great when we get a nice review, and I'm glad our efforts haven't gone unnoticed, and we just hope that we bring some enjoyment to your commute or whatever it is you're doing when you're listening to us.
Mm-hmm.
Working out, sticking yourself with pins and needles, I don't know, but yeah, so thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And leave those reviews. They really do help. And thank you.
Yeah. I want to remind people that, you know, we do alternate. Every week we have new content coming out. And, of course, this was a main topic episode. The next episode to come out will be current events. We'll recap, you know, what's been happening at the Disneyland Resort. So, you know, we have a mix here. We have what's happening now and... what's happened before and even what's happening in the future.
That's right. Thank you for listening. Talk to you next time.